you have to look at housing as a safe space. It's foundation for a lot of people. Housing provides peace. It also helps lessen the trauma that a lot of people are experiencing.
At Home with Growing Older is a nonprofit organization which believes in peer learning and creating discussions which bring the lens of aging to a variety of topics. At Home with Growing Older is proud to be your host of At Home on Air, a radio hour offering connection, community, and knowledge to our participants remotely. Now, we invite you to listen and learn from this live recorded episode of At Home on Air.
Welcome to At Home on Air. I'm Susie Stadler, the Executive Director of At Home with Growing Older and the producer of this podcast. At Home on Air is a forum to explore the work it takes to be at home with growing older, but also the delight which comes with it. These explorations are made possible through the insights of inspiring guests from the arts, architecture, construction, medicine, social services, and beyond, and through comments and questions from you, our listeners. So thank you for being here. In this season of At Home on Air, we are inviting community builders and placemakers to discuss their vital role in keeping us healthy and connected, and examine how activism and advocacy are sparking new models of community through affordable housing projects, grassroots organizing, and more. In this episode, we are fortunate to welcome a consummate placemaker and community builder, Nicole Battle. Nicole is the CEO and director of real estate development of the Baltimore-based developer of affordable housing, GetGo, short for Govens Ecumenical Development Corporation. GetGo is also a program partner of our Aging 360 workshop, a collaboration to support their residents to age in place longer and healthier. Welcome, Nicole. We are so grateful that you're here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Susie.
We all know that we are in a housing crisis. As the CEO of GetGo and its real estate developer, you have been responsible for developing over 600 homes, and you are approaching housing development as an opportunity to strengthen the entire community. What does this really mean, and how do you put this into practice, and how can others learn from it? That's really the topic of today's conversation and the title, People First, Creating Spaces Without Walls. What does this really mean for your work at GetGo?
You have to look at housing as a safe space. It's really, it's foundation for a lot of people. And providing housing also provides peace. It also helps lessen the trauma that a lot of people are experiencing. And so for me, it's just providing a space, a foundation, safety for people who are in need. Providing almost 600 units of housing, it also contributes to community. When we spoke last month, I had shared that we are the master developer of the former Memorial Stadium site, which is considered an intergenerational community, given our partnership with the Y of Central Maryland, Gilcrest, and other developers of affordable housing. But all of the housing that's on site is for older adults, 55 years and older. So when I look at developing this foundation or this safe space for older adults, it's also a matter of creating community as well.
I've been at Stadium Place. It's not in downtown Baltimore, but it's definitely part of the Baltimore fabric. And what's remarkable about it is that the housing is built around the sports field. And, you know, that's where schools train, et cetera. And the Y is also located there and maybe uses it too. But then there's also sort of a sacred space at the entry to this housing development. Can you say a little bit more about this sacred space and your role in it?
Sure. So we have at the entrance of Stadium Place, right along 33rd Street, there's Thanksgiving Place. And it's called Thanksgiving Place because it is an ecumenical park that's available to all of our residents within the community as well as those outside of the community. It has a pergola, it has a labyrinth, it has green space, pathways throughout, benches. It's a sacred space in the sense that it was also funded, and our partner for this particular part of Stadium Place is Nature Sacred. And so Nature Sacred has created, I think at this point, we're at 100 spaces throughout the US. And it's like a room outside. And once you're in that space, even though it's outside, it feels really enclosed. But it's open to, like I said, to the residents at Stadium Place and anyone in the community. The entire site is not fenced. Per the promise that we made when we became the master developer, it's open to everyone. There's no gates, no fences, or anything. But it's really a true community space, intergenerational space, where we have music, we have festivals. They've shown the Ravens games. We have the elementary and middle school that's used it for fun day. We've had outdoor carnival type rides. It's really a great space that's open and available to everyone.
So that's where housing really spills over into the community.
Well, it's really interesting. So Memorial Stadium is 30 plus acres, and you have the field, as you mentioned, where the Orioles and the Colts used to play. If you've ever been there, it's beautifully landscaped. Nature is very important, we feel, to the mental health as well as the physical health of anyone and everyone. Even though the community has mixed housing, we feel that anyone who lives in the city should have access to green space. And fortunately, where Stadium Place is located, it's within the city, but it's between the dense urban area and the county. The entire site is really landscaped well, but for this space, it's really just additional meditative space, per se, that's available for everyone. So, Nature Sacred, which is a wonderful nonprofit that I serve on the board of, that's what they do within urban areas throughout the US is really create these sacred spaces, meditative spaces to bring community together.
Such a great name, Nature Sacred. It says so much already. Maybe that's a good time also to talk a little bit about GetGo's roots and what role this plays in how you approach development in the community.
Sure. So in the mid-80s, GetGo was started by seven pastors of various denominations within the Govens community. And if you're familiar with Baltimore, Govens is in Northeast Baltimore. And so these pastors got together to address a need not only in their community, but also within their congregations. You could just imagine you got different pastors of various denominations. And if you're in any type of church, you notice that sometimes it's hard to all get on the same page and you're of one denomination. But we had this wonderful man who was the visionary and our founder, Reverend Jack Sharp, that was able to convince these pastors to really develop housing. The need at that time was housing for older adults that was affordable, that had a service component. And so the first community built was Epiphany House. And then later, again, to address a need within the congregations and also the city, there were older adults who had adult children with intellectual disabilities. So these same pastors were able to purchase homes in Northeast Baltimore, three group homes to create 20 units of housing for older adults with intellectual disabilities. And so in 1991, because they were the most active developer in Northeast Baltimore and their full-time jobs were pastors, they were forced to change their name to Gobenzeki Medical Development Corporation and hire a staff in 1992. And then from there, we just kind of grew. In addition to developing housing for older adults, we created CARES, our food pantry, which was at that time a closet. Right now, it's half our building where we provide food and we also provide utility and eviction prevention assistance. Then we expanded to housing for people who had experienced homelessness, and it was also considered sober housing for a lot. From there, it was like the late 90s where we responded to an RFP for Stadium Place or Memorial Stadium, again, to address a need within the community. And at that time, there was also the need of affordable housing for older adults that was just for older adults. A lot of the people that moved into Stadium Place when we opened our first building in 2003 had also lived in public housing. And public housing does not segregate housing for people who are older versus people who may be disabled or people who are experiencing other challenges. And so we had a lot of older adults who felt that they were prisoners in their own homes. You know, sometimes the elevator didn't work, the units weren't accessible, and the community wasn't conducive to individuals aging in place. And so when we created Stadium Place, this was a community that would address the needs of these older adults who couldn't afford the broad meads or the other communities like the Roland Parks or Brightviews. These individuals and couples were able to move into Stadium Place, live in affordable, decent, safe housing with other older adults. For us as an organization, it's always been about partnerships. We are not the organization that needs to do everything ourselves. We believe in partnerships, just like our roots show. Everything we do involves some sort of partnership from either the consultants or co-developers or co-owners or even service providers in the city, in the state, or at the federal level.
Well, we are, with our Aging 360 program, a beneficiary of this attitude. So we are really grateful about this. Nicole, you mentioned the food bank. What's really unusual is the food bank is not a separate building, it's part of your office building. And you're right there with the people who are in need and who might also need housing. So you have an opportunity to really be in touch with people. And I wonder if this was a conscious decision too.
Going back to my comment that we don't need to do everything. There are so many partners out in the community who have expertise that we do not have. And so our vision for it's the Gedco Community Hub, that's the building you're referring to, which is our main office and also the location of our food pantry. We also have a partnership with the Mayor's Office of Employment Development. So we have a representative who has a space at the hub who helps people with their resumes, helps them find jobs. We have a computer lab. We have meeting space for the community. And in addition to that, we also provide eviction prevention assistance, utility assistance, and prescription assistance. So if people come to us, and you know they're short on funds one time only because it's emergency funding, our goal is really to be a one-stop shop. And if we are unable to help them based on whatever their needs are, if they're there, we can at least refer them to someone that we know who can help them. So it's really a resource hub. And we were very fortunate to move into this space right around COVID. And also, one of our church partners, which was one of our founding partners, their church was closed because in Baltimore City, the archdiocese was closing churches. And so the timing worked out perfectly where we were able to consolidate our pantry or our community services arm with our administrative offices. we're able to help people in real time. To that point, we're able to hear directly what people's needs are. When we were separated, it was more kind of word of mouth. But being in the same location where you're experiencing some of the trauma that people may have when they come for services, or you're hearing directly what their needs are, and we're getting the calls that I need a voucher, or I have a family and we need a place immediately because we're about to be evicted. If it wasn't for that space, the hub, there's a lot that would have been missed in just our learning and our approach to providing affordable housing for people in the community.
You're a community hub.
We are a community hub. Yes.
So you listen to people, you get in touch with people, you know what their needs are. You also shared some personal learning you had from your grandma with me. And I wonder if you can share this again, because she has definitely impacted how you approach your development decisions.
Gosh, I guess it was over 20 years ago when I was working for a nonprofit in West Baltimore and we were partnering with Bank of America CDC. I had the opportunity to be on a team to develop a senior building. It was called Harlem Gardens. And all of the discussions with the architect involved my grandmother. My grandmother wants a bathtub. That's all she wants. We got to have bathtubs here. There has to be a linen closet. All the things that I grew up knowing what was important to my grandmother. And so, the joke was Nicole's grandmother is all in this building. It's Nicole's grandmother is responsible for half the stuff we have here. You have to have a large enough dining room because you have real furniture. It's not IKEA furniture, Same with the bedroom. Looking back now, some of that stuff I definitely get. I would still replicate, but then there's others, as I was sharing with Susie. Yeah, my grandmother wanted a bathtub, but we weren't always there to help her get out of that bathtub as she got older. There are certain things I would definitely do now and that I am implementing in all of our future developments to allow our older adults to really age in place more. Yes, we may have that bathtub, but we also need to have that bench and we also need to have those grab bars so that, if she's sitting there, she gets out. Same with the toilets. We've learned just having to retrofit her bathroom. We need to make our toilets higher. Smaller things that add so much comfort and really keep our older adults independent. But yeah, I remember the whole bathtub thing because a black grandmother, it's like, you got to have a bathtub, you got to soak. I don't understand why everybody has to take a shower. Yeah, but that was the joke.
Yes.
It was really funny.
Personal experience is a great place to start from, personal likes and dislikes. The participants in our workshop contributed a little bit to the call for higher toilets. What doesn't work for them is the toilet height. They were very adamant about this. So, yes, higher toilets. Thanks for sharing this. In general, your grandma was informing how you develop at the beginning, but now you actually invite residents in to share their thoughts and their insights about age-friendly housing. Can you tell a little bit about the process and what sort of next in your development bucket for GetGo?
I'm extremely grateful for the relationship we have with you and the Aging 360 program because we're using the document that was created from the interviews with the older adults that participated in that program to help guide us with the preservation project that we're currently doing that involves preserving 145 rental units for older adults at Stadium Place. Not to get into the weeds of the financing, but it's a prac to rad conversion where we're combining our contracts and we're able to maximize our rents so that we can service debt so that we can do the renovations on these buildings without increasing the rent for the residents, but upgrading their units so that they can age longer in community. We're using kind of the lessons learned or that document that identifies what would make our residents happier or help them more if we were able to incorporate within the renovation. So that's 144 units. In addition to that, we're in the process now of also securing the funding to finish Stadium Place because we've been working on that site for 25 plus years. There's going to be 93 new units of housing for older adults. And so we are taking our lessons learned from talking to our residents because part of the process for the Prac-the-Rad is to schedule meetings, multiple meetings, and receive the input from the residents of what they would like to see or what changes need to be made within their buildings. So far, I think we've had about three meetings that were very, very passionate meetings and very long. But they're basically all saying the same thing, and they just wanted to make sure that you heard it. And it was really, we were like lights under our cabinets. I've lived here for a long period of time. I'm sick of carpet. Get rid of the carpet. I need a shower head that I can use when I'm in the shower. I need a bench. I need my toilet to be higher. Can we get one of those lazy Susans in the cabinet so that we don't have to go all the way in the back to get our food or whatever? Can we look at maybe lowering the counters a little bit? All of those things that make it just a little bit more comfortable for you as you age within your unit. It was a great exercise, and we've learned so much that we will continue to implement in all of the new renovations and any new construction that we do as an organization. And it's continuous learning because there may be something else that may come up, but it's always best to find out what the end user needs. I'm not 80, so I need to understand from an 80-year-old or older, what do you need?
Yes, and they are the experts in their own home. They know very well what they need and what they want.
Agree. And my whole feeling is we're just here to help you stay in your home. They're not our homes, they're your home. So our job is to make it easier and better for you.
Nicole, I think there's also something really wonderful about being a nonprofit developer of affordable housing because your success is not just about making money, but your success is about putting people first. That's how it is measured too. And I wonder if you can say a little bit more about this. You have already alluded to it, but how do you measure your success as a nonprofit affordable housing developer?
Well, we are a business. We have the same expenses as any other business. We have people we pay. We pay utilities. We pay insurance. We have to pay the same consultants as any for-profit developer would. We still have to, borrow money at times. We do have access to more grant funding or lower interest debt than most, but unfortunately, there's much more paperwork and compliance documents that you would need to sign and adhere to. But one of the benefits of being a nonprofit, we have the ability to pivot pretty quickly, which is great, given the fact that we provide supportive services in all of our housing, be it for older adults or those who have experienced homelessness. We're constantly getting information from the end user on what their needs are. We are constantly seeing what works versus what doesn't. Almost 3 years ago, we actually started managing four of our older communities that address the needs of those of older adults, as well as those who have experienced homelessness, as well as those who are suffering from some sort of disability. So the knowledge that we've gained from that experience as well has also really kind of helped us become more educated or much more knowledgeable. And, I'm a lessons learned type of girl. So If I learned something this one time, I'm not trying to relearn that lesson. We try for each of our communities to make them better than the last. And I'm a firm believer that even though you may not have as much money as someone else, there's no reason why you should not have safe, decent housing that looks just like market rate housing.
Yes, and that keeps communities really healthy and connected. I would also like to touch a little bit on your somewhat unusual or layered path to real estate development, because you have a degree in landscape architecture in addition to having an MBA. Can you talk a little bit how this shapes your way of making decision or creating spaces without walls?
I got my degree in landscape architecture from the Pennsylvania State University. And that's where I really learned about how you can design land to create the environment that you want. You don't need fences to create boundaries. You can create those boundaries with, maybe a swale or shrubs or trees or rocks. When getting my degree in landscape architecture, I learned about grading, I learned about property placement, and I learned how to read drawings. That was a great base for me to get into development, not realizing at the time that that's what I was eventually going to do. My next step, I got my master's degrees in city and regional planning and public policy and management, really in an effort to impact policy as it related to affordable housing or housing development. Growing up in DC, it was always disturbing to drive through the city and identify housing that was quote unquote poor people housing or where Black people lived. And then you could immediately see the difference between, oh, okay, that place, that must be where white people live. The aesthetic differences between housing based on just really the race of people, it was wrong. And so I felt if I went to grad school and learned how to impact policy, I could make a change and really kind of end that type of development that, you looked at it and you determined immediately that there was a certain type of person who lived there. And throughout my career, I've been really fortunate to work for organizations that felt the same way. I am a product of the Enterprise Foundation with Jim and Patty Rouse, and they immediately believed everyone deserves a safe, decent, and affordable place to live. If you go to Columbia, it was mixed income housing. So all of the housing looked the same or, slightly different, but you didn't look at a house and determine, oh, that must be an affordable house or affordable unit, or a Black person lives there or a white person lives there. They were the first organization where our mission or purposes were in line. And then later on, I worked for like other organizations, for profit as well as nonprofit, who would develop housing using that same methodology where it didn't look like quote unquote poor housing. It looked like a house or apartment where you would want to live. For me, it was really all a matter of where would I want my family to live? Where would I want my grandmother to live? Where would I put my child or my mother? That's kind of how I got here, And if everyone, every developer looks at the products that they develop that way, we would have beautiful housing developments that were affordable to everybody.
Yes, and we would be all better off through it. Totally agreed. Thank you for all the work you do. And also, we feel very fortunate to actually know GetTico's work and how you work with the community and being able to connect with the residents who have a very strong sense of community. That's what we have experienced at Stadium Place.
You are listening to At Home on Air, We are now switching to questions by participating audience members in this recorded live episode. If you want a chance to ask your question, visit us at athomewithgrowingolder.org and register for the next live episode.
Let's look at some of the comments or questions. So John shared that they just completed 50 units of affordable housing with modern services and amenities, and also 130 units near a transit center, working together with Rebuild Together. It's a nonprofit who does volunteer work and repair. Very important. We have worked with them a little bit too. John describes community building efforts beyond housing, churches that have gardens for feeding people, meditation, prayer. And yes, it takes lots of volunteer work. Nicole, do you have volunteers who do part of the work or not so much?
We do. So Rebuilding Together is one of our community partners. They actually help with keeping our elders or older adults within their homes. They do a lot of home repair projects for a lot of seniors in the community. Our volunteers are really more so helping us with the food pantry. We have volunteers that serve on our board or our committees. That's kind of where our volunteers are really helping us. Unlike maybe Habitat for Humanity, who have volunteers that actually do the work in developing the housing or painting and stuff, we don't have volunteers that do that quite yet, but one day we will. As far as our transit centers, we have not been able to develop quite yet near a transit center. Baltimore is still kind of working on their transportation system. We're more of a community-based organization, so we're really doing a lot of work just within Northeast Baltimore currently. But because of where we're located and our partnership with the York Road Partnership, we're able to support our other community partners in the work that they do. What that support looks like is, you know, we have our Gecko Community Hub. We also have the ability to access funding from the state for some of our partners who are unable to do so. We're also able to serve as a fiscal sponsor if they do not have the financials or that financial infrastructure set up for their organizations. We're helping them access those dollars so that they can implement their plans.
Being fiscal sponsors, it's another way to build community and support smaller grassroots organizations in their local work, which is so important.
It goes back to the point that we can't do everything ourselves. So if we're able to create these partnerships, strengthen our partners so that they can get to the point where they're much more self-sufficient, more hands can get a lot of work done. And so that's something that we do try to do as a community partner, in addition to just the other development work that we do.
So Howard, one of the trainers in the Aging 360 workshop, asks, does GETCO have a current relationship with the 7 ecumenical communities who came together at the beginning?
Yes, Howard, we do. They're referred to as our member organizations. So we started with 7, and now we have 56. Of the 56, 30 are churches. We also have synagogues, community groups, institutes of higher learning, hospitals, the meditative center. Alzheimer's Association is now one of our member orgs. We still have the relationship with those 7. You know, different pastors are serving on our board from those 7. But yes, we do. And more.
What does relationship mean?
Sure. So our member organizations help us implement mission. And what that essentially means is they may volunteer with whatever we need, helping support our programs, such as our food pantry or working at our senior center or working with the older adults at Stadium Place. There are also opportunities for our member orgs to join our board of directors or our committees that help us create policies or practices so that we can improve our service delivery through GEDCO and in our communities. We also have the opportunity for people to donate. You know, through volunteerism or even providing funds that helps us further our mission and implement our mission. We are very fortunate, very blessed to have a very diverse revenue streams that really help us stay sustainable. That revenue stream includes grants, it includes donations, it includes volunteerism, people providing services pro bono, all contribute to helping us reduce our operating expenses, but yet still be able to implement mission.
Yeah, it makes you more resilient.
It does. One of our board members, she's always telling the other board members how proud and how fortunate we are that we've done a lot of planning, and sustainability is something that we've really been focused on because we've seen so many other nonprofit partners who have worked in Baltimore City who are no longer operating. They've had to close their doors because of really relying on one or two sources of funding to keep themselves operational. It can be complicated to have so many sources of funding, but it's also more comforting knowing that you don't just rely on one source in order to keep your doors open and keep your people employed so that you can continue to do the work that you do.
Yes, absolutely. And sort of talking about resilience and sustainability, we are in a complicated landscape right now, to say the least. And I wonder if this influences or impacts in any way your immediate decisions or future decisions, or it's just something you sort of keep a pin on, but you don't have to pivot yet.
So we're in the middle or near the end of our strategic planning process. We actually had our annual fundraiser last night, and I had the opportunity to speak to those in attendance. And I was commenting on the fact that these are uncertain times where we're really concerned about just the loss of humanity. And my generation, we've never experienced anything like this, where you have a government that does not look at the person. The humanity piece is lost. So we have a little bit more flexibility because we are looking at people. As Jack Sharp always said, if you're doing the right thing, God will take care of you. Things will work out. And so that's what we're doing. We'll continue to do what we are supposed to do. And we've been blessed thus far by doing that, and we'll continue to do it. And just like many administrations, they're temporary. The goals of the current administration may not be the goals of the next administration in the next 4 years. So far, we don't receive a lot of federal funding. We do receive federal funding for real estate development, and that seems to be protected right now because a lot of people, be it for profit or nonprofit, need money for development, and affordable housing is a lucrative business for a lot of people. So that part is safe for us. Operationally, we're having to really rely on our friends and our partners and staying within budget and figuring out how we can increase our earned income, which is also through development. One thing that we're really concerned that just recently came up is the administration's now new approach to providing permanent supportive housing. They're not in that business anymore. So the local jurisdiction, the Mayor's Office of Homeless and Supportive Services, in the past would provide 85% of their funding for organizations who were providing permanent supportive housing because HUD had started implementing the Housing First program. It appears now that the federal government is looking at more of a transitional housing model where they're wanting to limit how long people are within housing who have experienced homelessness to possibly, I think it's 2 years. And within those 2 years, they should be receiving treatment. And after 2 years, that treatment should work for them and they should be able to move out of the supportive housing.
We are working in the Tenderloin, and Howard is leading this effort with SRO residents, single room occupancy residents. And we have learned from them so much, and we know how complicated their life is, how important the home is for them. It's so stressful to have to worry about home.
None of our housing is transitional. And the reason being is we believe if someone achieves their goals, the last thing we want them to have to worry about is where am I going to live? And so it's almost like they're being penalized for doing the right thing, getting themselves together. And then we would be saying, oh, you've done the right thing, you've got a job, it's time for you to go. People need community. And a lot of people, especially who have experienced homelessness or coming straight from homelessness, it's more than just homelessness. There's trauma that person may have experienced that has led to addiction or led to some sort of mental illness. And I don't know about you, but people that I do know that have experienced addiction, sometimes they relapse. 2 years may not be enough, you know? So I'm concerned. I'm still learning really about what exactly the pivot will be and what will be required of us as a provider, and how is that going to impact us in the service delivery we currently provide. I mean, we have a housing crisis and even more so a homelessness crisis. I just don't see this as positively impacting that.
Yes, difficult to imagine how this could have a positive impact. The more important is to have developers like GetGo who provide permanent housing and can provide this stability and figure out how to continue to do this. We are sort of nearing the end of this really moving conversation. Before we say goodbye, Nicole, do you have any other comments or last words?
Thank you so much for inviting me. This was fun. I'm so grateful that people would even want to listen to a podcast that I'm on. Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you. And again, partnerships are super important, and communities is super important in order to serve older adults. So thank you, everybody, for being here, and we'll all do our best. Can you remind me again what Jack Sharp said? This is such a good last word.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So Jack believed if you're doing the right thing, God will take care of you. Things will work out. He never worried. He was just an amazing individual. And, you know, there's not a day that I don't miss him. I have a lot of Jackisms, but that one, you know, is if we're doing the right thing, everything will work out. And that's what I believe.
It's a wonderful way to end on, I think, for all of us. Thank you, everybody.
This episode of At Home On Air was produced by the At Home with Growing Older team. We could not host these conversations without the generosity of our marvelous and passionate guests and hosts. Thank you for sharing your personal and professional insights. Thank you to our live audience for your thoughtful contributions. To subscribe to this podcast and for more information, visit us at homewithgrowingolder.org. At Home with Growing Older strives to educate, inspire, and connect people across generations and disciplines to re-envision and improve the experiences of later life. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in for the next episode.